Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, March 24th, 2010, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, 90.7 FM, KBOO.fm on the web. And this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
We talk water with High Country News editor Jonathan Thompson.
Newport winds. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration will site its future headquarters on Oregon shores.
And we remember Bishop Oscar Romero gunned down 30 years ago today.
Portland area weather today, beautiful, sunny with a high near 67. But get it while you can because the rain comes in tonight and stays for a couple of days with highs in the 50s and lows in the 40s.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Slowly, slowly, details are seeping out on the latest shooting death at the hands of a Portland police officer. The victim in this case is reported to have been bloodied and advancing on the officer with a knife. To clarify the description of the weapon, Police Chief Rosie Sizer says it was really more like a box cutter. Authorities said that the man had cut his neck many times before he was taken down by four rounds from Officer Jason Walters. Four rounds. Dr. Karen Gunson, no pun intended, the state's chief medical examiner, said that the man had, quote, multiple, closed quotes, shallow, self-inflicted wounds in his neck. But does this seem a bit extreme to you? There are easier ways to disarm crazy people carrying box cutters. Liam has this.
Yeah, like this way. In Bellingham yesterday, police detained a man they say was waving a large sword around and stabbing objects in a parking lot on Bainbridge Island. The shirtless man was covered with scrapes and cuts. He told the off-duty Bainbridge Island police officer who approached him that he was hunting werewolves and chuds who could disguise themselves as humans. He said he feared getting hurt. The man put down his sword and throwing knives at the officer's request and was taken to Harrison Memorial Hospital for evaluation.
All you got to do is ask him to drop the weapon. Fatigue, swollen legs, and nausea, bad enough when one's in the family way, but shackles? Washington State has joined half a dozen other states in banning shackles on women prisoners during childbirth. Governor Chris Gregoire signed the bill into law amid cheers from former inmates. The new law prohibits any restraints during labor, childbirth, or post-delivery recovery. Restraints also are banned for medical or court trips during an inmate's third trimester, with limited exceptions to prevent escape or injury. Thank you, Washington.
Yeah, you need a law for that. Newport and NOAA together at last. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, after months of analysis, confirmed that Newport will be its home in the Pacific Northwest. Port of Newport officials have maintained all along that Newport is the best option. None of the three competing Washington sites, Bellingham, Port Angeles, or Lake Union, offers a practicable alternative. The analysis came at the recommendation of the Government Accountability Office after the Port of Bellingham protested the selection of Newport because its port is in a floodplain.
A floodplain, indeed. And what port isn't actually in a floodplain? Monday was World Water Day. Trouble is, here in Cascadia, there's a lot more to say on the subject than can be said in one day, so we plan to devote a whole week to the topic. My guest this morning is Jonathan Thompson, editor at High Country News. Welcome, Jonathan. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Good morning.
Well, of course, the question of who owns the water we drink, who buys it, who sells it, and how much this affects the way that we live in the West is a huge elephant in the room. No one talks about it, but it's there. And people who are familiar with issues having to do with water are pretty worried. Tell us a bit about how the system works, particularly to the disadvantage of the already disadvantaged.
Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting. Basically, this is the hugest issue in the West, I think. Typically, water is owned by people who own the land, or that's how it started. If you own some land, you could turn out the water onto that land and grow things on it, and that's kind of the way it was supposed to work, and you had rights to that water as long as you could use it. But over time, that's kind of changed a lot, and I think it's changing even more now. In where people are separating it from the land, and that's really where you run into some problems because it allows you to buy and sell water as though it's this commodity that can be shipped around. And it leaves us and leaves farmers, the local farmers, without water, for example. And you also, one of the big things we see right now is bottled water companies coming in and buying the water from out of springs and streams that might water farms, and they're then putting in bottles and selling it. So,
and there's many problems associated with that. For one thing, it's creeping towards the privatization of water, and also it uses more plastic bottles.
That's correct, yes. And they always come with a big promise of jobs, I mean, of course. And so that looks pretty appealing, I think, to a lot of farming communities, for example, or old mining or logging communities that have lost that industry. And so, hey, if we can sell our water, why not? Of course, it does come with a big cost, mainly that they lose their water and they lose the rights to that water.
One quick question before I let you go. We have time issues. How is it accomplished, separating water from land? How are those laws brought into effect?
Well, it's actually extremely complicated. It's something that sort of happened over time. Like I say, I mean, originally you weren't supposed to be able to do that. That wasn't the idea because how could you do it? You had your water, you had your land. It's been able to happen over time in part because of water development, dams and that kind of thing, which allow us to transport water, for one thing, away from the land where it originally was used. It's also just happened through the kind of changing of laws where you get population centers, for example, like Phoenix, where there is no water. They need to move it to get it there, and you get the money and the power behind that, behind the real estate complex there. And you get water moving around, basically. And once that starts happening, it gets detached from the land pretty easily, I think. So it requires a lot of effort to make laws that don't allow that detachment of water from the land.
Thanks so much for that. My guest has been Jonathan Thompson, an editor at High Country News. High Country News, you can find that online, and it's a wonderful publication. I love the back page. Thanks so much, Jonathan.
Thank you.
In Roseburg, more than 50 families face a dry future. The families say they've been blocked from putting a pump in the Umpqua River, a dispute with the owner of the properties at the heart of the matter. In a lawsuit, ranch owner Michael Hayden claims flooding and erosion of his land has been caused by the residents' use of a drainage ditch, underground pipeline, and catch basin in disrepair. In the end, residents say they may have to buy water and have it delivered.
Case in point. Well, as we are still talking about water, we see some of these issues discussed by world leaders played out close to home. The proposed Nestle bottling plant at Cascade Lux is another case in point. Virtually all of the liabilities lurking in the future of water are going to crop up if Nestle's plan goes forward. My guest today is familiar with some of these liabilities. Joy Keane is with the Sierra Clubs Columbia Group. Good morning, Joy. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Chris.
Talk a little bit about Nestle's plan. What is it that the company wants to do?
Nestle is hoping to build a water bottling plant in Cascade Lux right on the Columbia River to bottle the city's tap water as well as their spring water that's coming out of Oxbow Springs. That spring water is currently being used for a fish hatchery out there. And what Nestle proposes is that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, basically the state of Oregon, who owns the property that the spring is on, give Nestle the rights to that water, and in return, they would trade that water with the municipal water that Nestle purchases from the city as a consumer. So it's a water trade. It would be the first time that anyone in the United States has ever tried to use municipal well water to grow fish in a hatchery. They have 1 year to test their theory to see if the fish can actually grow in municipal tap water. Their first try putting the fish in that municipal water was a miserable failure. The wrong valve was turned, and the fish were put into straight tap water, which is chlorinated, and every single fish died.
And you got fish, hot and cold running fish, when you try to take a valve.
Yeah. So, you know, what the Sierra Club, Columbia Group, Food and Water Watch, and other groups that care about this clean drinking water and watersheds around Mount Hood are hoping is that ODFW does not allow this trade. We would also hope that the city of Cascade Lux would not allow Nestle to build the plant right on the gorge. Nestle is no friend to labor. They consistently try to build these plants in places with depressed economies, where the local citizens feel like they will take any job offered to them, even if it's not union, it's, you know, unskilled, really low pay, they're very dangerous jobs. So what, you know, basically the Sierra Club is asking that ODFW doesn't trade away something that is our birthright, clean drinking water, to a multinational corporation who contributes nothing to our state and wants to take 317 gallons a minute out of our water, or of our water out of the ground and fill 200 trucks a day to sell it elsewhere for 1,000% profit.
And, of course, those trucks will be rumbling up and down I-84 mm-hmm. Day and night, right?
And through the main street of Cascade Locks, which is a pretty much a one, you know, there's one main street in town, and, you know, it's a tourist town, and suddenly 200 trucks a day are going to be rumbling through there. It's going to destroy the quality of life.
It's really an unthinkable prospect, but it's important that we think about it. It's important we talk about it. Can you just let people know how they can find out more information about what's going on at Cascade Locks?
They can call us here at the Sierra Club. I can give you my email address if you want to do that.
And, of course, there's the Sierra Club website.
Yep. Sierra Club website is www.oregon.sierraclub.org. And on Monday, actually, we are going to ODFW headquarters at noon to let them see the petition that we've been circulating with signatures on it of all the Oregonians that hope that ODFW does not do this water trade.
Thanks so much for that. My guest has been Joy Keane with the Sierra Club's Columbia Group. Thanks for being with us today, Joy.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
The cognitive disconnect between enlightened self-interest and unenlightened self-interest is arguably the root of many of America's most pressing problems. It affects everything from education to law enforcement to park benches. Here's an example. After tax measures 66 and 67 passed, CEOs of a certain mindset are being tempted to relocate to states with regressive tax structures. We wish them all the best in their new homes, undereducated workforce, eroded environment, antiquated marketing system, and weird manifestations of the criminal mind.
And plus horrible benches. And now finally this. On March 24th of 1980, 30 years ago, Bishop Oscar Romero was gunned down. 30 years ago today. Oscar Romero was the Archbishop of the Roman Catholic Church in El Salvador. He became a martyr for the sake of justice. Although he began as a conservative archbishop opposed to the progressive liberation theology that was popular among those seeking to help poor farmers in El Salvador, Oscar Romero experienced a radical conversion when his friend, Father Rutilio Grande, was assassinated as a result of his commitment to social justice. Through weekly homilies on national radio, Romero advocated for an end to the repression of El Salvador's people, thus making himself an enemy of the government and the military. Because of his prophetic witness, Romero became a target of assassination. As he was saying Mass on March 24, 1980, he was shot and killed. Quote, "A bishop will die," close quotes, Romero had said, foreseeing his own fate. But the Church of God, the people, will not perish.
This has been Eric Cascadia for Wednesday, March 24, 2010. Engineering is Kurt Lauer. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. Chris Andre is the producer. I'm Liam Delta.
You've been hearing news and comment from Air Cascadia on KBOO, your community radio at 90.7 FM in Portland, KBOO.FM on the web. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thanks so much, members.
Stay tuned now for Flashpoints. Reactions to the health care bill from representatives of Physicians for a National Health Program and the California Nurses Association, and Ali Abunima on more settlements in occupied Palestine.
Thanks for listening, thanks for your support, and have a good day.